Welcome to 3DBPM's Pulse Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most advanced, fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing technologies with the people that make them happen. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of 3DBPM, the leading media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-changing world of AM. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to this new webinar on composites additive manufacturing. This is certainly one of the most fascinating and innovative segments of the AM industry and manufacturing in general. The turnout to this webinar has been really good, so thank you. And this is certainly an additional confirmation of how much interest exists towards this segment of AM. So today we'll present the main idea of this event is that we'll present some of the key findings and forecasts from our market study on the state of the composites AM market. So our objective with this report was to answer questions such as how large is the composites AM market? How large can it get? Which technologies will be adopted more? How much material would be consumed? How much composites material would be consumed by AM technologies? And which are the biggest segments for adoption? And which technologies should these potential adopters bet on? So these are some of the questions we looked at. And although we looked at several different opportunities in our 10-year forecast, we've identified a few areas that we feel are more immediately relevant in the transition towards additive as a production solution. And we'll hear in this webinar from three leaders in this segment, specifically in these more immediately relevant opportunity segments. And we will be covering, you know, their technologies, materials, and services. So our speakers are Daniele Martani, Director of International Sales at Ingersoll, a company that is a leader in the composites and tooling industry. Martin Eichenhofer is the CEO and founder of 9T Labs, which is a Swiss company leading the charge for continuous fiber AM production. And Thomas Collett is the director of 3D printing materials and marketing at Levos Group, a company that has been developing, has been pioneering actually many advanced additive manufacturing materials, including several composite materials. So just before we get going, I wanted to go through a quick service announcement. If you have any questions for our speakers, please write them in the chat on the right-hand side, and we will get to them during the Q&A session at the end of the presentations. You will also be able to get a copy of the presentations at the end. So just make sure you stick around for that. So let me start. Let's get into this study. Let me give you a little bit of an introduction to what our study looked at and what some of the key findings are. So first of all, we surveyed about 50 companies that operate in the composites additive manufacturing segment. This is pretty much the entirety of the segment. It's a young segment. 50 companies is not a small amount, but it's a young segment that's growing. Based on the information we collected, we built a database which we used to create this 170-page document with 60 charts and tables to where we analyze and forecast different segments of the market. Of course, we present an overview of the entire market. Then we look at hardware, we look at materials, and that's really the core part of this report. And then we look at services and applications. So let's get into this market. How big is this market? So based on the data we collected, we estimate that the market is worth about, global market is worth about 480 million. That's about half a billion. So very small market. This figure, of course, includes all hardware, materials, software, you know, composite specific software, services, and also an estimated figure that is relative to the value of the applications produced with these technologies. And of course, because it's such an early market, we also include research and business development investments in developing the various areas of this market. Just a quick note, technologies such as powder bed fusion and also some filament technologies, they can be used with composite materials, but they can also be used with unfilled non-composite materials. So we use the coefficient to estimate the percentage of these technologies that are used for composites. Just so we expect this 480 million market to grow into a 10.6 billion market within 10 years. Based on the research we've done on the potential of each technology, we think these are realistic expectations. And the idea of the report is to understand how many machines need to be sold of each technology, how many materials need to be sold, and how many applications need to be produced to reach for this forecast to actually be confirmed. So one of the key findings, I think overall the main finding is that, well, composites are interesting because they are a production. They're looked at for production, for indirect and direct production, additive manufacturing production, final parts production. And by the way, by final parts, we also include tools, which are an indirect production method, but they are a final part in and of themselves. So I think this is very interesting that the composites are a production market because that's what's going to generate the high speed growth. Another interesting finding is that the ratio between the value of the applications produced and the value of the material sold is fairly small. And this is different from other AM segments like metals, ceramics, and even polymers, where actually a very small amount of material is used to generate a very high value part. And we're gonna see why that is during this webinar and also into the report. So let me go. So just a quick note about this slide. As you can see, applications are the biggest segment in the overall market. So let's look at the three areas that we want to focus in on this report. The first one is we define as LFAM. So LFAM is a universally accepted acronym now, because it stands for large format additive manufacturing. And large format additive manufacturing was actually enabled by composites. It wasn't possible, or it was really hard to do very large format parts until technologies were developed to print high throughput of materials, of composite pellet materials. These are chopped fiber composites, of course. In our report, we of course look at both chopped and continuous fiber composites. And these LFAM systems, these are really large systems that are used to produce very large parts. And we see this as a very high growth area. We think the market for this system, for these hardware systems, is going to be over 1 billion by 2030. And we think this is the largest opportunity for hardware because the value of the systems is very high. These are some, as you can see in the slide, these are the key players, some of the we've identified. So Cincinnati Inc. was one of the first companies to enter this market, even though now their focus has shifted more towards smaller size systems. And really the market is now contended between Ingersoll and Thermwood, which are really companies that have very deep experience with subtractive systems, and they are developing the additive technologies. And we will hear from Ingersoll later on in this webinar. So we will hear more about how the technology works and what the potential is. So let's go on to the next slide. The next area that we think is very, very relevant, immediately relevant, is the area of continuous extrusion is the area of Cartesian. We call it Cartesian extrusion of continuous FRP materials. So these are materials that these are technologies that are not necessarily based on large machines. They're more based on smaller size machines. Sometimes even much. They're much lower priced, This is a particular segment because this is the biggest segment of composites today. And the reason why it is because the segment leader, Mark Forge, was the first to introduce this kind of approach a few years ago with a very low cost system. So it established a very large installed base of systems. However, the company, and that was the right thing to do at the time, of course, targeted specifically the prototyping and tooling markets. And what we see is happening now is a new generation of systems is emerging that is targeting production. They want to provide alternatives to traditional composites manufacturing to produce a lot of parts using continuous fiber materials. And so among these new competitors that are emerging, there is Russian company Anisoprint and also 90 Labs that we will hear from them later in this webinar. And I think it's going to be very interesting because the approach, the technological and business model approach that 90 Labs is presenting is actually very different from Anisoprint and Mark Forge. And another interesting I think highlight of this segment is that Desktop Metal, a company that is now focused on establishing the production market for metal binder jetting, also introduced their first continuous fiber 3D printer. And again, this is a technology that's different from Anisoprint and Mark Forged. So, but it's still based on smaller size systems that we expect will have a very high install base. So so they will be, like I said, more immediately, they will become relevant more immediately than other technologies that are farther down the road. And so in the report, of course, we try to quantify that. By the way, there are two main hardware technologies in continuous 3D printing. One, continuous composites 3D printing. One is this Cartesian approach. At least that's how we divide them. One is the Cartesian approach, and another one is the robotic multi-axis approach. They're very different. They have different potential, but the Cartesian is much more immediately relevant than the robotic, which is more complex and more of a long-term opportunity in our opinion. So let's move on to the last slide of this presentation. In our report, the core of the report is of course materials, and what we do in our report is we look at materials from many different points of view, and that's very peculiar of the composites AM segment because they are composite materials. They're much more complex than non-composite materials, so we look at them from several different angles, and we look at the material potential from the fiber form angle, so whether it's continuous or chopped, from the fiber type angle, which is whether it's carbon fiber or glass fiber or other reinforcement types. We look at it from a matrix point of view, so matrix form, so whether it's pellets, whether it's filaments, whether it's non-matrix or just composite fibers, or whether it's powders. There are many different types of matrix forms. And then we look at it from the point of view of the matrix type, so whether it's thermosets, thermoplastics, but also, you know, what type of thermoplastic, advanced, you know, high temperature thermoplastics. And that's why we wanted to have a material expert here such as Levos with us to explain to us the different types of materials, but also because Levos is venturing into what we consider to be the most immediately relevant aspect of composite materials for additive manufacturing, which is the pellet materials. And this is of course related to the first slide, the LFAM, so very high throughput, very high consumption of materials. So we expect these materials, these pellet materials, to really be used in very large amounts. And by the way, this is something that's very unique to the composites area. No other, except maybe cement, no other material in AM technology is used with these quantities. And finally, so like I said, just to summarize, we see composites as a production market for tools, large parts, eventually large batches of parts. We see high material consumption. We see for this reason, we expect that material prices will decrease significantly over time. We see this as a very rapidly evolving market with several new players entering the market. And again, chopped fiber is more immediately relevant for the medium term in terms of production, and continuous fiber is a more of a long-term opportunity. Our full report is available, so please get in touch with us if you'd like to receive an excerpt from the report. And thank you very much for joining us today. We'll be offering all attendees a discount on the full report, which a discount code which you'll find in the chat. And now I'll pass the controls over to Daniele Martani to hear more about the Ingersoll technologies. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Davide.
Thank you. Hi, Daniele. Yeah, Are you there?
Here. Thank you, Davide. Compliments for your introduction.
Very good. Thank you very much. I hope, yes, and hopefully in the Q&A we'll get to discuss what you think of our analysis.
I think it's not far from the reality. Anyway, as on the market, on the field, we see not so far in the future. You are paid to see so far in the future. I'm paid to sell something next year. So we have a different job. Anyway, so just to start, thank you everybody for the attention today. I will try to be short enough. We have a lot to say. We have huge machines to introduce to the public. And I thank everybody for the time today with us. Now, the starting point of Ingersoll has to be the CNC control machine tools, and we are the big boys there. I mean, all our machinery are big, and therefore, even in the additive manufacturing, we went big immediately. So we start our introduction to the 3D printers called the MasterPrint families that are based on pellets, and they can work on an open market for the materials. What is doing Ingersoll started a long time ago, 120 years ago. Of course, we started from metal cutting. Then 25 years ago, we extended to fiber prism machines for aerospace industry. And 5 years ago, we started the adventure of additive manufacturing. What is additive manufacturing for Ingersoll? We start to be immediately industrial. So a must for us was to start from pellets in order to reduce dramatically the cost of the material for the end user. We control totally the machine by Siemens control. So it's an industrial grade, industrial standard Siemens control 840D. And this means everything running around, including our proprietary software and so on, everything runs industrial. Industrial means also usually big, large stuff. And we are large enough. What is important in our world is to synchronize everything. And that's why we are CNC controlling not only, of course, all the machinery movement and dynamic, but we CNC control the full capabilities from the extruder. We are using much majority of composite material. Nevertheless, we also tested some metrics and neat material. Anyway, our testing so far in 5 years, in 4.5 years, has been touching a lot of different materials. Again, we are open source. We are cooperating with a lot of people on the market and for the material itself. And we test actually in our demo center that is located in Rockford, Illinois, in our headquarters. And we are open to any kind of new material, new composite, both with the chopper fibers, carbon, chopper fibers, glass, chopper fiber, boron, and so on. This in order to extend as much as possible the application fields of this incredible and so flexible technology. Definitely, when you have such a big possibility to print out something, you can do a lot of things that are today not really in the mind of people, not in the mind of designers. There is a large opportunity for anybody there. Where we started from a molds application, so printing toolings. These started from Boeing at the beginning because they needed toolings fast and not expensive. The toolings we found very different applications, let me say, in when the tool has to work at room temperature, when it has to work around 100 degrees, so we call it at mid-temperature, when the tool has to work into autoclave, so temperature around 200 degrees. These are free words for the tooling, but are words mainly that are going to affect the material to select and the design itself of the tooling. Not so much the machine itself that is the printing. For the printing machine, all these three families are, let me call it, easy. Three examples of tooling. On the left side is a trim and drill tooling working at room temperature. Mid-size is a tooling for glass fiber, and high temperature on the right side for autoclave. As you see, the design of this tool is very thick, a lot of material in order to control better the deformation at high temperature. We start the family of MasterPrint from the entry level, that is the MasterPrint Robotic. As on site an extruder of 70 kilograms per hour or maximum extrusion capability, of course, again, is a CNC controlled. And the size of the robot is, of course, limited by the size of the robot itself. Nevertheless, keep in mind that into this black section that you see at the bottom of the robot, you can print actually a car. And there is virtually no limiting length of the robot, being the robot located on rails. Another size, so the MasterPrint itself, that we call 3X or 5X, is a gantry. What we see now is the gantry that is located in our development center in Ingersoll, so is at the disposal of any kind of demo. And is already a quite large gantry, 4.5 meters between columns, 12 meters long, and 2.5 meters high. Nevertheless, this is just a starting point. We can build any size virtually. In this kind of machine, it's very important to keep in mind the capability to pick up another module that you see on the right side. That is the finishing module, is the five-axis milling module. Ingersoll is a master in five-axis milling. We are basically an aerospace industry company, so we can five-axis mill at very high accuracy. We come from aerospace. And this module can be an option to be positioned or not instead of the printing module that you see in operation now. I think I would like to ask Federico if possible to have a movie now. Okay, we see now the movie of the robotic printer. This is the pre-acceptance test before the delivery, so don't take a look to the background. This is the inside of Ingersoll in Rockford. We are just testing the machine for the end user before the shipment. As you see, the robotic is doing something really big enough, let me say. The next one, please, Federico. Okay, now we see in operation the large MasterPrint 3X that is located in Rockford. As you see, is a much more clean machine because we use it at demo. It's still there, as it's still at your disposal. And you can see very clearly how the machine works with this kind of beads. In this case, with four walls beads. The machine can print, as we said, in the basic version, 75 kilograms per hour of material, but we have already a version that is printing 300 hours, kilograms per hour of material. This is one example of what can be printed, is a shelter for defense industry. And this is the most famous probably print we did. The machine that you see is located in University of Maine, and then is now printing in one single piece a full motorboat of 13 meters long. In this short movie, we can see the five axis milling operation for the finishing of what you printed directly in the same place. And this is another big point when you print something really big. We continue. On the master print, we apply also the 5X, that is our unique approach, where we move by the Siemens control, so programmed moving of the nozzle itself. Therefore, this machine is a full 5-axis printing operation machine, nearly unique in the world, and able to do something really important, that is overprinting. Why overprinting is really important? Because you can sincerely make better pieces from something existing or something low cost printed. Meaning that this is a very simple example of overprinting. The base of this should be being printed by polypropylene, easy one. And then we can put overprint a kind of exoskeleton to make a much more higher performance, mechanical performances, due to the fact that we are going to print ABS or PI, something really higher performance technology. This is also possible to apply in the repairing or the simply modification of molds. If you have been producing a mold and you like to change the geometry of the mold without scrapping totally the mold, you can do just the area and then mill again the area to obtain a perfect mold ready for the use, the new use. A big point that probably most of you know already, but is important to remember. The thermoplastic composite are typically recyclable, and we use exactly or nearly exactly 3% of scrap is the maximum foreseen during this kind of technology. So it's in some way a very much green technology. Some other example, as you see, we print 45 degrees. We can print any angle actually. And very important, we print open air. This is a unique by Ingersoll. Not to mention how easy it should be for the operator, for the end user, to work in an open air instead of to be in a hot chamber. No compare. Now I spend really 3 minutes only about the other technology from Ingersoll, is the master print continuous filament. We are talking about a smaller size, but not that small. Actually, the machine is able to work on a cylinder, because there is a rotary table under the machine, a cylinder that is 1 meter diameter by 1.5 meters high. So in this kind of machinery that works, as I told you, by continuous carbon filament with the thermoplastic matrix. In this case, is a totally different kind of productivity, of course. We are talking about a few hundred grams per hour, but this is something that where the printing operation plays a role of high strength due to the high content of a continuous filament of carbon. It can be also glass fiber, but we are using usually carbon. And this kind of machine has really, again, a lot of opportunities, again, to make much larger parts that are now made typically with this kind of technology. And very important, again, overprinting. Even more than before, what I told you about overprinting before is more applicable now because we are adding continuous carbon fiber. So the most rigid and the most high performance possible mechanical speaking in the world. I think I finished my time and I thank everybody. I'm waiting for your questions at the end of this nice webinar. Thank you, David.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, great. Yes, thank you very much for that, Daniele. That was really, really impressive. I would like now to turn the mic over to 90. oh my God, I blanked. Michael. Martin Eichenhofer, sorry. that's the beauty of live TV, right? Martin, hi. Sorry, I totally blanked for a second. I'd like to turn the controls over to you, and honestly, I'm really curious to see, you know, because I know it's very different from what we just saw. So I'm really curious to see your presentation also.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. Really appreciate it, and. Yeah, as you mentioned, it's a little bit different approach, and I like to walk you through and explain you a little bit the differences and what we are focusing on. So 90 Labs, still a young company, closing in on 3 years. We're based in Zurich, so located in Switzerland, and pushing forward on the next generation of composite manufacturing. Let me jump right into the topic. I actually put here on the first slide a little bit of a provocative question. So I just read it out. What's the problem with current composite 3D printing technologies for structural parts in serial production? And I want to emphasize your structural parts, the load-bearing structures, and serial production, and put some names there. This is not so much judging on them. I just want to make a point and emphasize. I have the biggest admiration for all of those companies. Most of them I know personally well. What I want to emphasize here is like a lot of those companies in that space. Are growing and they have technologies, but they're not so much yet focused on real structural load carrying applications and serial production. And what are the most common shortfalls or shortcomings in those technologies? On the short fiber side, there's a lot of potential for short fiber for certain applications, but not so much for metal substitution and like real load carrying structures. So the material is just too weak compared to the metal counterpart. Continuous fiber, a big and growing field. There it's a lot of different approaches, different technologies. We talked about robots, Cartesian, in situ printing, and etc. What's usually the case, like for in situ, that's like where you just print the part and then it's finished, that you have insufficient consolidation. That's a big issue. So consolidation is actually quite a wide term. So everything from bonding between layers, between the porosities, so the imperfections in the parts, the tolerances, etc., which is quite relevant for this point. But you have to understand that if you go to production, serial production, the customers are usually not making any compromise on the quality, on the integrity of the part. And if you don't tick the boxes of certification standards, you will not make production. So that's an issue. The complex part design, it's actually also widely discussed part or a point that how to orientate those fibers. You know, we have like Cartesian approaches, we have the robots which orientate the fibers out of plane, but essentially it actually requires more than just orientating the fiber out of plane to for certain spectrum of parts, and those are the smaller, quite complex parts we usually mill, all those metal parts which are not in composite yet, and there's a reason for that. And those technologies are not yet really fulfilling those requirements to go into those applications. And the last point, it's expensive in general, like the cost structure is not so much yet tailored for production business cases and applications. It's rather on the prototyping side, on a business model sometimes run on the material rather than on the machines. And then all of a sudden you will not be able to create business cases which are viable and really make this applicable for a lot of applications in production. And I will talk more about this. So this is a little bit of a provocative slide. As again, like all those companies have great technology. It's just like there are some shortcomings for a certain application spectrum, which is structural parts and production, series production. And this is what we are getting into. This is really like our agenda and our focus direction. So we want to not go into the prototyping market. We want to go really into production market. And for that, we actually take a little bit different approach, different angle on this. So we take the continuous fibers, which give us the strength of this high performance material. It's a known material. It's been around for 50 plus years. And we actually don't reinvent the supply chain. So we actually make continuous carbon fiber composite material, which is available on the market, accessible to our machine. Then we use 3D printing technology to bring in automation to drive down costs. We also take the software aspect of 3D printing to create superior parts, more, you know, more feasible fiber orientation in the parts, etc., and also easier to use. So you don't have to be a 10-year expert to make a decent part. And then, and this is really crucial, we introduce the post-consolidation step, a molding step, which applies pressure and heat to kind of fuse the part together or weld it together if you want. And this really gives us the reproducibility, the low porosity, the good interlaminar bonding, good surface finish. You can make a full list like tolerances, which is really relevant for series production. Basically, this is the door opener for production. And we really strongly believe that for short and midterm, maybe even long term, that's the only way to really go for certification and, you know, meet all those standards and tick all the boxes to for production. And there's actually another aspect of this molding, which is really relevant, which I will actually introduce on a slide to come. The technology itself, it's actually not that we are just building a printer and you can have it and that's it, or a mold, it's the same for that. So we're actually building a full solution, and our product offering is an end-to-end solution. So we have, and you see it here and on the slide, it starts on the left in our design software. This is not a standard 3D printing slicer software. It's really tailored for building structural composite parts. Also has direct links to commercial FEA tools, so you can do digital prototyping, digital validation, so in a simulation environment before you go into the physical world, which is then this two-stage process where we build the hardware. First, we have the printing module, which is we call actually build module, and then there is the fusion module, which is the compression molding step you see on the right. And everything is kind of managed and operated by our cloud-based system, our software, which is which you see just like illustrated on the bottom, which is an overarching software platform where everything is getting managed, the workflows, the customer data, and the processing data. And this is also the platform which we can then use to optimize the machines based on processing data, for instance. So on the material side, we're really going for high fiber volume content, structural composite materials. Those are the two standard materials we have yet in our portfolio. It's a polyamide pair and a PEKK pair. Why pair? Because we always offer you can print hybrid. You can print just plastic or continuous carbon fiber plastic. And usually parts are hybrid, so you have to print both. And we are offering always a bundle, so you can have the right plastic material with the right carbon fiber reinforced plastic material. So the PA and the PEKK, both at 60% fiber volume content, so really structural composite material, high tensile strength, so between 1700 and 2000. Close to 2,400 megapascal, and you see also the modulus, so it's really high, more than 100 gigapascals, so high modulus material. So for structural applications, that's what we're all about. And on that slide, here I want to emphasize what I mentioned, not mentioned, but what I just like, you know, hinted before, that this molding step actually allows us to do one thing, and that's really important, not just one thing. One thing was the quality, right? I mentioned before, to go, you know, in production, series production. The other aspect, and that's really unique, is that we can actually make quite complex fiber orientations because we are printing parts, or actually we take a global part, we split it apart into subparts, we optimize them individually, we print them, put them back together as a multi-part assembly, and then fuse them together. And this really allows us to get much more complex fiber orientation, to get like, you know, entangled fibers, you know, kind of looped fibers, which allows us to go into a completely new spectrum of applications. So this is like for here illustrated for a small hinge bracket from a helicopter, it's a helicopter door hinge. And that's really interesting because all those applications have high value. So you can create really decent business cases. There's serious production, yes, but traditionally they're all metal. And there's a reason for it because we could not do it commercially and in this particular case also not technically before to really go into those structural applications. And now we have a technology which allows us to, for one, get the quality right, and also create this kind of complex fiber rotation, which we need to perform well enough to substitute the metal. And this is now just like here one illustration. And on the next slide, you see also a little bit like the approach. Software is really important. We're investing now, and we will be much more even the next year and the years to come, investing in software to create kind of like what we call a digital prototyping environment. So there it's like, for one, you want to create the most or the best fiber design possible. But on the other side, you also want to digitally validate it. So you want to have basically insurance that the part is performing well enough before you go into production. Because, you know, again, we're actually doing molding. So you have to invest into a mold. And you don't want to iterate. And it's a little bit, from a traditional 3D printing point of view, a little bit different. You don't want to iterate and make like a 5, 6, 7, 10 different molds, right? So you want to have a really sophisticated software that allows you to basically get the assurance that if you go into production, you will meet all the requirements. And that's a little bit how we do it. Usually you go, in a lot of cases, from a metal part, then we do isotropic topology optimization. There's also something about anisotropic topology optimization. There are two different approaches. You get into what we usually then do is we make an abstraction for the fiber orientation and for the fiber layup. And then we do an iteration loop. It's kind of a parametric optimization. Or parameterized optimization to really find the right sizing of the different elements or features and also the right stacking sequence of the layers. And then we go into production. And you see this here for this hinge, which actually on the slide before you have seen the old generation of the hinge, and now this is like the new generation of the hinge, just as here as an example. And here on the last slide, I want to take too much time. I was supposed to talk 10 minutes. The way we offer the product is on a subscription basis. So it's not that we actually, maybe I still have to stop one step back and say we are producing not parts as a contract manufacturer. We are providing technology for our customers to produce parts. And the way we do it, the way we provide the technology is in a subscription bundle. We have software, hardware, and engineering bundled together under a yearly fee. It's quite a dynamic, flexible model, and it really also lowers the entry barrier. So you don't have to invest too much money to get into your first applications, and it's quite scalable. So you can gradually, extend your subscription. And the material will be offered on the site on a pay-per-use basis. But we are quite open on the material, so it's not that we are actually manufacturing our own material. We are kind of a reseller for material. We have our standard material in the portfolio, but we're also open to talk if there's a decent business case and application to talk about special material compositions. So that was on my side. This was the last slide I wanted to show today. Just reach out to me if there are open questions on the technology material, and then we can talk further, and I can also explain you more on the applications and business case. Thanks so much for listening.
Thank you very much, Martin. That was great. That was hope everybody can hear me. I have before we go on to the many questions at the end of the presentations. So next up is Mr. Thomas Collett from Levos. And after we looked at two hardware technologies, we're gonna ask Mr. Collett to give us a presentation of the materials that are building this market. Like I said, in the report, materials are a very big focus. There are many companies doing composite materials, and Levos is certainly one of the ones that's been the first and to pioneer this segment and with some of the most interesting materials. So without further ado, I pass the controls over to you.
Davide, thank you very much. Can you hear me, everybody? I hope so. Very good.
Well, yes.
Okay, thank you very much for the introduction. I would quickly then introduce the company, what we are doing, and then focusing, of course, on the materials. So I don't know, can I turn the pages? Yes, I hope so. Yeah, okay. Quickly to the company. So I think that's important as a background. So we are specialized in making materials, so polymers. We're doing that for about 40 years already. Company is a bit older. It's more than 125 years old. And we're doing materials for injection molding, extrusion, so very classic technologies. And now for 10 years, also doing materials for 3D printing. So We are a company, mid-size, I would say, 640 people worldwide, 400 million of revenue. And one of the main activities, as already told, is that we are in polymers and additives for the polymer industry. In the 3D printing area, we are concentrating on two 3D printing technologies, which is extrusion-based processes like FFF, FGF, and in the powder bed fusion, that's where we have our LuvoSint materials. Today, I will concentrate on the LuvoCom 3F materials, because here it's more about the composites, which is the topic today. Also, in the powder, we do also have reinforced materials. For doing our research, development, and also supporting customers, we have an extensive range of machines, 3D printers, and other devices needed to do that. So here are just some examples of machines we are using and can provide as a service to our customers. So you will know all these machines, being the experts in the area, so I don't need to explain in details. The same goes for the laser sintering area. So what is special about our materials for the 3D printing? Material extrusion technologies as FFF and FGF. So once we started, and that range is not that old, it's quite only 4 years old now, based on all the experience we had, we started to develop these materials, knowing some of the challenges in the market. And also the speakers before mentioned some of the issues so that people were lacking of having the choice in technical materials, materials performance, strengths, C layer strengths, printability, warpage, to name some. So we focus on, and going now to the list here, is reduced anisotropy, easy to print. Also one challenge was, because that's in the meantime, majority of printers printing in non-heated chambers. We enable that, that including our peak material. I come to the materials a little bit later. So the range of materials we are offering, all materials are tailored for 3D printing. So it's not that we just sell unmodified materials. It's all about compounded materials. Also, as my predecessor in the presentation, we focus on serial production. So functional prototypes, serial production, that's our focus. And we are focusing on matching injection molding strengths. So that means customers are used to a certain performance if it comes to parts made out of polymers, compounds and composites. That's what we want to achieve and what we have achieved with 3D printing in these technologies. What is also important for the market is, of course, quality, consistency. That's what we are doing every day in our production for the materials used in serial applications. And our 40 years experience in the compounding helps us to do that. Okay, what is the secret? What is the background for our materials? So as told, once we start 4 years ago, we had a look to what is existing at this time, and still it is dominated by materials like PLA, like ABS in the FFF. But also at this time, you could find polyamides, nylons in the market. And so we had a closer look to that. So we checked a filament based on the polyamide 6 and we printed that. And here you can see the printing conditions. So we tested out different temperatures and we printed small cubes, 4 by 4 by 4 millimeter. And then we just looked into that by CT analysis. And what you see here, the voids inside, that is just because of material performance. It's not that we wanted to produce a certain infill, the part meant to be 100% full, 100% infill. but that's the best we could achieve. So the best infill or the least porosity which could be achieved is 22%, which is an explanation why parts are not that strong printed with that material. Okay, then we worked on the material and found the root cause for all this. And by modifying the material, so we still talk about a polyamide, in our case, our 3F polyamide HT, as we call it. We have the same printing conditions. We have the same printer, everything. What we could achieve here is a porosity down to 2%. Which is quite similar to injection molding part with the same dimensions. And that's what you get. So once then we print the test bar, then you put it into the test machine, then you have a fracture, and that fracture shows that we have a break through the layers, because what we do here, printing is in the Z direction, and here the break goes through the layers. And that leads to quite good material performance. And I will show you on the next slide, or on the slide after that one, because first I need to explain a little bit about the background, what we did, how we printed the test bar, what are the results from that. So typically what you have for testing, getting the material data, you make test bars. You know that from the injection molding industry. So you can typically mold test bars. You fill the test bars from one side. That's what you see on the left side on the top. You see there the test bar which is filled, and then you have orientation of your fibers and your molecules in the best possible way to get the highest values. Then you could also mold from the 90 degree angle. So you have a different orientation, which will give you lower results in the strengths and everything. What we also can do is we simulate a weld line, a knit line in molding by filling the test bar from two sides. And then we do that, of course, with our 3D printing materials. We have the different possibilities to print the XY. With the 0 degrees infill, we have the XY with the 90 degrees infill. And to have the best output or the best analysis possibilities for getting the Z strengths, we print cubes and mill the test specimen, because printing vertically test bars is normally not a very good idea. Okay, then having all these compared, so now here we compare three different materials. In this case, what you see here is our polyamide HT, and I will explain more about that family of material a little bit later. Our polyamide HT carbon fiber reinforced here in the first group, this is 15%. Carbon fiber reinforced. And here we compare the injection molded grade or injection molded test bars with the 3D printed. What you see here is, first of all, that depending on the orientation and how you produce and mold the part, you have different values, of course. So the best in the 0 degrees, 175 MPa. Then you go down to about 90 for the 90 degree, and in the weld line, you are again a little bit lower. The same trend you have in the 3D printing. What you can have here is still quite very high values in the tensile strengths. The loss we have is mainly to less orientation of that technology. So the FFF doesn't give you the 100% orientation of fibers as in the injection molding. That's why you have that difference. Going to the 9743, that's the other material, which has 25% of carbon fiber. You see that you have a different level, a higher level of strength, but the same trend. So same as on the left side. And then we also can have, and that's already telling what we are doing, we customize materials according to the needs, because it's not about to have the very best performance in just as an example in strengths or e-modulus, it's just to have the properties the customer needs. So in that case, the customer wanted to have a nice, good surface, a well-balanced strength. And that's what we achieved with that material, which we are making for a customer. So that product you see here on the right side, that is a product we do for a company making 3D printing filaments. And the material is balanced in the way that there you see no difference between injection molded parts and 3D printed parts. That's due to the fact that we have shorter fibers and the lower percentage, but still a good strength level. And again, very important, comparable performance of injection molded parts and 3D printed parts. Yeah. As already told, a little bit more to the PAHT, which is one group of material we offer. So that is due to the fact that customers came to us and asked for PA6 materials, where we said, okay, that's good to have, but there is some issue with moisture and there's issue with warpage. So let's work on the material. And what we got is that family of materials where we can achieve very high strengths. We have reduced the water absorption a lot, and we do not have any warpage, which goes for all of our materials. Working temperature is up to 150 degrees C, short term up to 180. Some of the grades are also metal detectable. Another family of materials, this is our materials based on PET. It's not a PETG, so PET, I would say I call it the more technical material than the PETG, because it has higher temperature resistance, it has better mechanical performance. It's our easiest to print material. It has very nice surface appearance. It has good strength, which is sufficient for a lot of applications. Temperature resistance is up to 125 degrees. And inherently, PET has low water uptake, so pre-drying is normally not an issue. Then as another example, we go up to, well, so we start with polypropylene and we go up to peak. We are not limited to certain polymers. We modify almost all polymers in that area, so in the peak, we offer the neat version, carbon fiber, glass fiber reinforced versions. As you all know, PEEK offers chemical thermal resistance. And that material, as with the others, also here to print, you don't need a heated chamber. Annealing can always be recommended in general for all materials in 3D printing. If you want to have the 100% top performance in means of crystallinity and in stress annealing. Here in that case, due to the unique performance of the material, no raft is needed. The material is also approved to certain flame testing like EN ISO 109931. That's for the, that first one is for rail. For the medical application, and the other one here mentioned is for the flame behavior. This is an overview about some of the materials we do offer. So as told, we start with polypropylene, PET, polyamides, PPS, PEEK, also PEKK, which we do modify to be able to print in a semi-crystalline version. So that is the range of materials we offer for direct extrusion, FGF printing, or filament production. And then also we do offer our range of filaments. So this is a limited range. And what we have achieved is a TÜV SÜD certification for the filament in combination with the printer. In that case was an Ultimaker Pro bundle So to have the monitored production, steady geometrical accuracy, steady tensile strength, consistent, reliable material and emission tested. These are the topics we covered with that certification. This is to help the industry to establish 3D printing in the industrial environment to get everything which is needed to have that process technology established. Yeah, summary, my last slide is, our materials are tailored for 3D printing. What we offer, as we could see, the good mechanical strength, which is involving the improved layer bonding, enhanced printability regarding warping control, increased speed. The material choice we offer, also what we offer, I mentioned that is the customized version. So whenever you see there's a need for another different material, please speak with us. Here we talk about functional materials, so not only reinforced, but also ESD, thermally, electrically conductive, tribological modified. We talked about the injection molding quality, matching that with 3D printing. And yeah, we are already in serial applications. We are working off many in many projects. So fortunately, 3D printing is already in the next step. And so good to see that and hope it's continuing. And yeah, we are offering our experience and service to everybody. And I'm also available for your questions. Thank you very much.
Very much. Hi, thank you very much, Mr. Collett. Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you to the speakers. I mean, these were really great presentations. We are going now to open up. We did go a little bit long, so apologies. we'll try to answer as many questions as we can. We're going to open it up for the Q&A. We're going to start from the first questions. I know some were answered live during the session, but so just to clarify, the recording of this webinar was is going to be available, and you should be receiving that automatically upon participating. So the first questions we have is whether there are market players, first question was for me as a presenter, if we see any market players for large format additive manufacturing for continuous fiber. And so in our interpretation, large format additive manufacturing is only for chopped fiber. We don't see, obviously, large format only refers to Cartesian architectures. So we don't really see that. We don't really see examples of continuous fiber materials being used with those technologies. Even though, of course, the objective of the robotic extrusion technologies, the multi-axis, which are what's generally used for continuous composites, is the objective is to go larger and larger. So eventually that may be, eventually there will be large parts made with this technology as well. But that's really, this technology presents a lot of challenges. So this is really something much farther into the future. Let me go on to the next question. So I have a question for Daniele about Masterprint. About which materials is Masterprint using?
So the Masterprint is basically a CNC control extrusion system. Therefore, we can apply theoretically all of the composite with the thermoplastic matrix, possibly compounded for extrusion. And our nozzle maximum temperature capability is 400 degrees. Therefore, we can reach the level of a PKK and everything lower than that in terms of a matrix welding point. Again, we are an open material user from pellets. I have been really interested by the Thomas introduction, Thomas presentation. They have apparently wonderful materials, and I will surely contact Thomas later.
And in fact, the next question is along those lines. How do you ensure that the strength between individual layers is ensured? And this is something that also Thomas touched upon, and that he can also answer. And that it does not connect to so that strength remains sufficiently high.
But again, as Thomas showed some experimental data that are very interesting, we have clearly a difference between the two directions, the bead direction and the transverse direction to the bead. This difference, nevertheless, is mostly relevant to the quantity and the size of the chopped fibers. In theory, with the chopped fibers that are round spheres, I saw even Luos as round glass spheres possible as a compound. And in this case, the difference is reduced to 20-25% of the strength in the two directions. And therefore, it's not only a question of different bit direction, it's a question of direction taken by the small chopped parts of fiber that are inside the matrix. It's a long story. Nevertheless, the idea is to two points are the basic solution for this. One is, of course, to know it and therefore to design the part or the tool, taking into consideration this different isotropy. The other point is simply to overprint. Don't forget, the overprint can add strength in the direction that you want.
Thank you very much. I don't know if Thomas wanted to add something, or I can go to the next question.
If there is a specific question left regarding material performance, I'm happy to answer. So I don't know what I should add regarding the performance of the materials. Okay. What I can tell you is that these findings, this development, it was done by us already now almost 4 years ago. So in the meantime, I would call it a standard in the industry. We know that we sell quite some material into the market to also well-known filament manufacturers. So there is already a lot of experience, but fortunately not only filament, so that's good information for Daniele also, that direct extrusion, also our materials can help a lot. And we always are happy to collaborate with machine manufacturers because we need that combination, because only machine or only material does not help, of course.
Right.
Thank you. And I'm going to jump a little bit to a question for 9T Labs. I believe this was answered live, but also for the rest of the audience. The question is, so if I understand well, the presented stiffness strength composite material parameters are for the feedstock tapes. Do you have the numbers for the 3D printed materials? And also related to pricing, what is the feedstock material price?
All right, thank you. Yeah, I already tried to answer it, but I think we can really follow up on this and also get the information to the audience. So yeah, I mean, it's right. I mean, there were different ways of measuring it. Like we also actively doing it on printed parts. It's always the question, you know, if you do print the parts, you also have to do standard test specimens, right? And standard test specimens are usually kind of plates. And we did both, and we see that there's a very similar characteristic. It's more like the scattering of the testing itself. It's different. So we can really match the feedstock quality in the printed part. But then when it comes to actually a complex part, a non-standard test specimen part, this is like an all individual. And then you have to rather compare the simulation results to the final test apart. That's at some point the only way then to get a quantitative answer to that. And I think that's how we do it. So on basically standard test specimens, and then we also do it on final parts, which is basically the final test, I guess, to really get an answer to how high performing the material is. And yeah, we're doing really good on that end. And yeah, at some point it's a little bit individual on the part, but yeah, we can do it with customers as well. We do feasibility studies on things like this. So we're actually really actively going for application screening, developing business cases technically and commercially. And within this kind of feasibility studies, we do sometimes also simulation. So reach out to me if you're interested, and then we can discuss this on your applications.
Thank you very much. Daniele, we have a question for you about if you're using local reheating for the high performance for the and high temperatures, I'm guessing materials, and also can you please explain a little bit about your continuous CFRP technology? How does that work, and how and what kind of matrix polymers does it use?
Okay, the first question is a little easier and shorter. The first question, we calculate exactly the timing from one bead to the next one. We are not reheating, at least not normally reheating. We have a very fast machine, very high acceleration, deceleration, and the machine is rigid enough to permit to be back exactly at the same at the right time with the right density and flow of new material to weld together with the existing substrate. So this is the point that we use and makes possible also to avoid a hot chamber. The other question is a much longer to answer. I went very fast into this continuous fiber machine. It's, of course, a machine for another kind of use. It's a machine for parts, not for molds. It's a machine where we are using a lot of carbon fiber, saying that the raw material is based on more than 80% of carbon fiber, only 20% of matrix. The matrix that has been tested so far has been ULTEM, so PEI, and PEKK. These are the two matrix so far tested. We can probably go lower in performances of the matrix. In this case, maybe it's better to stay on the high end, because this kind of printing is only for really high-end applications.
Thank you very much. And we have a question for Levos that's related to that, and something I also always wondered, if you can explain a little bit more about the no heated chamber needed in relation to your peak filaments, and you know, in light of the fact that the industry understanding was always that you did need a heated chamber for peak, but you apparently...
Yeah, let's say the challenge of 3D printing was in the past, and still it is in some way, of course, that you have all the different layers you need to weld together. And also you need to manage the different performance or behavior of especially the semi-crystalline materials. And the peak and the back and all the high temperatures, they are, let's say, a challenge. But this is also due to the nature of the material. So what we are doing, we are modifying the materials in that way that we don't change the nature of the material. So it's not about, let's say, blending, or it's not about changing in the way that you lose a lot of performance. It's just to keep the polymer as it is, to keep as much as possible, and we are achieving that very well. The performance, the well-known, the heat, the chemical resistance, the temperature resistance, but to make it possible to print the material in an easier way, because what the customers don't want to have is warpage, they don't want to have low adhesion strengths, and it just, and that's of course our IP, how we do it, but what I can confirm is that also our peak, our PPS, can be, and others, they can be printed in non-heated chambers. Yeah, the only challenge you have is with these high temperature materials that you still need to have the nozzle which can provide the high temperature. So just as an example, to name one, Ultimaker, most of our materials can be printed, including the PPS, but the PPS and the peak, the PEI, this is too high in the temperature. For that, you need other machines, but not a heated chamber.
And can you, we have another question on this. What is the printing temperature of the carbon?
So the peak is just inherently. So peak typically you are in temperature range between 380 and maybe 420 degrees C. Yeah, that is the range you need to have in the nozzle area. And then you extrude that into the printing chamber, which, and again to say that, needs to be heated. The one thing which needs to be heated is the print plate, of course, and that is in the area of, let's say, 100 degrees, depending of the material. Other materials like our PET, there you don't need heated print plate. Also, there you can be completely in a cold environment.
If I can add a little comment, we have been testing some peak, not from Levos, is working well enough in open chamber. The point about the heat of the plate can be avoided using some first layers to be sacrificed.
Yeah, that's what we don't need with our material. So we don't need a raft in most of the cases. Yes, you can print, I would say all materials, all thermoplastics can be printed in some way, but the question is about then the performance at the end, and that's where you need to look into the details. So I don't say it's impossible with other materials, and also heated chamber is a good idea, but you know that this is also involving more costs. So a machine where the heated chamber needs to have the 200 degrees C will cost much more than a machine where you don't need any heating, or you maybe only need a little increase in temperature.
I of course fully agree about it. Not only the machine is more expensive, but if you consider the power supply for one life of the machine is enormously higher. So it's a big point to avoid this heat of the chamber. Big point.
Thank you very much. I have a question about continuous composites. If you can help us understand, Martin. So what do you see as the biggest challenges of printing continuous fiber reinforcements?
Is a question for Thomas? Sorry, I understood.
I think Martin had to leave. That's what I see in the chat here.
Okay. Sorry about that. So I turn that over to you. What are the challenges of the biggest challenges of the robotic continuous fiber reinforcement technology?
In our understanding, as machinery is probably the void content that already Thomas advised about. Because this kind of parts, they need to be really high performances parts. You cannot just give a part that is nearly what they need. These are parts typically for space. So the people that are asking for these parts, they expect really very low void content, and this is our pain in the ass, sorry to say.
Thank you very much. I honestly had a lot more questions for you, but we really went very long. So I think we can conclude our session. Like I said, the webinar, the recordings will be made available. Any question can be sent to the speakers or to us at 3DBPM. Once again, thank you everyone for participating. Thank you to our speakers. And see you next time.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. Bye-bye.